Welcome to In Clear Terms with AARP California. Conversations on issues impacting Californians of all ages. Here's your host, Theon Gordon.
Welcome to In Clear Terms with AARP California. Join us as we dive into issues and policies that impact Californians of all ages, particularly older adults, and learn how you can connect with AARP to make our state more livable for all. I am an AARP volunteer and your host, Dr. Theon Gordon. Joining us on the show today is Heather Tinsley Fix, Senior Advisor of Employer Engagement at AARP. We'll discuss the challenges older workers face, the unique value they offer in today's evolving workforce, how employers are embracing an age-diverse workforce, and practical tips for older workers and job seekers. Heather, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Dr. Theon.
So let's just dive right in and get straight into the clear terms. Share a little more about your work at AARP.
Sure. So I love my job. I'm very lucky in that regard. And I've been doing this work for about 10 years. My work at AARP is to engage the employer community on the value of older workers in particular, and also on the value of a multi-generational workforce in general. We really believe that all ages bring something to their jobs and to the workforce. And it's really a competitive advantage if you can leverage all of those generations together. It requires work. You know, you have to have a safe and inclusive environment. But we really think that the multi-generational workforce is a competitive advantage for companies. So that's really what I do. I talk on venues such as this. Sometimes I speak at conferences. We create resources for employers that are practical. We've just launched our new guide to hiring a multi-generational workforce. So we have lots of resources available for the HR group of folks.
I cannot wait to see that guide because this is a topic that I think is so important. There's so much value that we gain when we have a multi-generational workforce. So when we think about the workforce, though, right now, can you just paint a picture of what the current job market looks like for workers age 50 and older, particularly in the California area?
Sure. So right now, the job market data for older workers is pretty much on par with the job market for workers under 50. There are about 38 million workers 55 plus in the U.S., and their unemployment rate is a little bit lower. That's kind of the one difference with this age group. Their unemployment rate is 2.9% versus 4.3% overall for the U.S. Their participation rate, the labor force participation rate of the 55 plus is 38%. Now that sounds low, but that's because there's no cap on that age group. So if you dive a little deeper into the data, it's actually a lot higher for folks 55 to 64. It's a 65.9. So almost 66% of people 55 to 64 are working. And then some more sobering data, the long-term unemployment rate for workers 55 plus is about 23.2%. The gap between the long-term unemployment rate for older workers versus younger workers is actually narrowing, and that's good, but unfortunately, it's still a little bit higher for the older workers. But jumping over to California specifically, percentage-wise, again, it's very similar. So the unemployment rate for workers 55 plus is 3.8%. versus 4.3 for California.
And let me just differentiate a little bit.
Sure.
Right, when you're talking about it, because you're saying 55 plus, you break it at 55 versus 50?
We break it at 55 because the Bureau of Labor Statistics creates their numbers in half-decade chunks.
Ah.
Yeah, I think it's because 65 is the sort of typical retirement age, and that might be why they release their data in those bands. But in order to get 50 plus data, you have to use query tools and stuff like that. So I'm just using the data that they put out publicly. This data is freely available, which I think is great. So all you have to do is search and it'll pop up.
That's fantastic because I specifically said 50. So I just want to make sure our listeners understand we're talking about that 55 plus range in our percentages now. So if you can go back to the California data again and share a little bit about how that differentiates from the national data.
Yes, right. So the numbers for California, again, and I found this data, by the way, freely online from the California Department of Labor. So this data is, again, they follow the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So they also put out data in this half decade or break the data in half decade chunks. So in California, there are 2.9 million workers 55 plus. This data is from August, so very recent. And the unemployment rate for older Californians is 3.8% versus 4.3% for all of California workers. So that, again, is a little lower for older workers. And their participation rate is high, 65.2% for the 55 plus. So again, that's very, very close. The national is 65.9. For Californians, it's 65.2. So it's, again, a lot of similarities between the California data and the U.S. in general. And there are a lot of folks 50 plus, 55 plus living in California. So that's a healthy participation rate given the large numbers of Californians over the age of 55.
Those labor-intensive baby boomers.
Yeah, that's right. I wanted to make two other points too, which I think are very interesting. So the first is that workers 75 plus are actually the fastest growing segment of the workforce.
Wow.
I know. Their participation rate is projected to grow from 8.9 in 2020 to 11.7, almost 12% in 2030. And while that jump might not sound big in terms of actual raw numbers, that is a jump in those 10 years. It's almost a doubling of the size of the 75 and older folks in the workforce. So really, if we're able to stay healthy and keep our minds sharp and keep our skills up to date, there's no limit to the amount of time we want to work or can work if we want to.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I know. But I just think it's great that people have that option.
It is wonderful to have that option. Yeah.
Yeah. And then more than a quarter. So this is based on our research. 26% of older workers are actually doing freelance and gig work. So that's a way to stay in the workforce in a very flexible manner. And that might explain, again, some of the data around the growth of the much older workforce, 75 plus. But gig work and flexible, you know, work from home or freelance work is very popular. And over a quarter of the 50 plus are doing that.
It's interesting that you talk about the gig work, and it's such a new thing, especially for people in my generation, the baby boomer generation, and even older. What are some of the challenges that older workers face in this new economy?
So most of the challenges that older workers face stem from ageism and age discrimination in the workplace, which is stubbornly still with us. We know that about two-thirds, so 64% of workers 50 plus, have reported either experiencing that themselves or seeing it at work. So this is our research now, so we're breaking it at 50. So workers 50 plus, unfortunately, and we do this every couple of years, we'll survey workers 50 and up, and it hovers right around this mark every time. It hasn't really budged. So sometimes it goes as low as 61%, but this year, the most recent data is 64% of the workers have seen or experienced age discrimination. And another really sobering fact is that 22% feel like they're being pushed out of their job because of their age, like steadily sidelined. Their performance evaluations are going down, even though their work hasn't suffered. They just worry about being pushed out of their job.
And that's really interesting to hear that when you think about ageism. It makes me think there's some thought about aging or something that people believe about aging that just may not be true. So, Heather, what are some of the most persistent myths employers have about older workers?
So there are a number of stubborn, persistent myths that have continued to hang around. The most obvious, or the one that's not going to surprise you that I'm about to say, is that employers can often assume that older workers are not tech savvy. That is sort of just seems to be the received wisdom that younger workers are good at tech and older workers are really wise. I think those things are both true, but sometimes younger workers have the wisdom, and sometimes the older workers actually have the tech skills. Actually, in our own organization at AARP, I'm currently working with a colleague of mine on AI prompts and learning how to do those, and she's older than I am. So she has the expertise that I don't. So I just really find it frustrating that there is that persistence that older workers are not fit at tech. Another myth is that sometimes we as people can assume that older people, older workers are resistant to change. This is another, again, very ingrained notion. And it's not true of all older workers. It's not true of all older people. We do know that older workers are more resilient than their younger counterparts. And this really came to the fore during COVID. There were a number of surveys that showed this independently of each other, including one from the Pew Research Center, that older workers were able to navigate the complexities and the concerns and the fears around COVID a little better in their day-to-day lives. It's not that they didn't have those fears and concerns, but they were able to move through them. And younger workers struggled more. And that makes perfect sense because that's what happens. As you get older, you develop your sense of how you can navigate life and you discover your own resilience. And so that's very normal. But older workers do have a lot of resilience. And so I just like to mention that as well to employers. And then lastly, there's unfortunately that goes along with this notion that older workers don't or can't learn new things, which is not true. As a matter of fact, our research shows the opposite. Sometimes employers will privilege younger workers with training opportunities. And I talk to them a lot about this and say, remember, it's really important to make training available to everyone and to ensure that you provide supports for different types of learners.
I think that's so true. I mean, just being in that age population, I love new learning. And I think the other thing is how we learn. And that's another thing I think that's been very interesting in this marketplace. Anytime someone wants to give me a lesson on something, I could call my daughter or anybody and say, oh, how do you do this? Oh, mom, look it up on YouTube. You could figure it out. And I'm like, oh, I want to learn from somebody. Just show me. I want some hands-on training. I like in-person training, but I have adapted and I've watched videos to learn in the training. But I do believe, just from my perspective, it takes away from some of the interactivity that you get to have with a person going through things and experiencing it in that way. And I think the older generation, when you're looking at the boomers, the greatest generation, and you're looking at how we learned and how we grew up learning, that may be one of the ways those myths manifest as well, because people believe, oh, they can't learn because they can't just get it off of the basic recording that we sent them. Yeah, we can get it, but we like talking to people. We like interaction. So I think that's also one of them. When you talk about the data, you mentioned what it said about the resilience and productivity a bit. Tell us a little bit more about what the data says about the older generation or the productivity, the adaptability, and even loyalty among older employees.
Yeah. So you hit all of the high points for sure. Our research shows that older workers are slightly more engaged than their younger counterparts. So 65% of older workers are highly engaged versus 58% of younger workers, and slightly more motivated, again, 81% versus 77%. So that's from our business case for Workers 50 Plus research. More recently, Gartner research that was released last year found that from 2020 to 2024, the only group for whom engagement at work has risen is baby boomers. So engagement for all the other generations has gone down a couple of points, but for baby boomers, it's actually increased. So we know the engagement is there. We know the motivation is also there. And our own research, as I said before, shows older workers are very interested in learning new skills, including learning AI. 48% of the workers we surveyed said they are interested in learning and know that they need to tackle this new skill called AI. So that's really important to note. I want to make sure people note that. And we have research that shows that mixed age teams, so teams with a mix of ages, outperform teams that are more homogenous in age when they're doing tasks that are complex or creative or require diversity of thought. So there's not a really strong, the research that I've read on this doesn't have like a strong theory as to why that is, but I think it's because there's a lot of knowledge spillover on teams. Teams are, you know, a smaller unit than, say, the whole organization. And my theory is that older workers share this knowledge with the younger workers, and the younger workers share their knowledge too. And that two-way knowledge sharing means that the team performs best. So that's another really strong, I think, argument for a multi-generational workforce.
Oh, yeah. I love the idea of the multi-generational team. And I do some training and support. One of the things that I've done when I see a multi-generational team in team building, I do this exercise where I have them write a love letter to each generation of appreciation and what they appreciate about the generations. And they all get to also come up with their song for their generation. And I'll never forget one of the teams, and it was just this baby boomers versus Gen Xers or something. And the baby boomers came up with respect. All I want is respect, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. And the accolades that they gave to each other, though, to talk about how they appreciated what each brought to the team is what really allowed them to have those songs and kind of make fun of themselves. We always say, oh, that generation, they're lazy. They don't want to do anything. But really, the thing we appreciated most was how they taught us about work-life balance, because we didn't grow up with that. So I love when I see those multi-generational teams. How does AARP support employers in building age diverse teams?
Yeah, I would love to talk about that. That's what I do. But I just want to quickly go back and give you a quick stat on loyalty because you asked about that. AARP research shows that older workers are 2/3 less likely than younger workers to switch employers in any given month. And that is a very normal, common thing for this time of life. I always tell employers that younger workers, they're perceived as flighty, but they're moving around in order to build their career. They're moving, sometimes zigzagging up a ladder, hopping from organization to organization. And they're also trying to figure out what they like, what they're good at, what their calling is. So it is true that turnover tends to be higher among the younger workforce and much lower among the older workforce. So that mix of ages is important if you want to stem too much turnover. But yes, loyalty is a big factor in terms of the older workforce. So I just wanted to speak to that real quick.
Heather, thank you for bringing that back up. And I think the other part of that is it's not just loyalty. It's kind of how we were brought up with the brick and mortar companies that kept you for a lifetime. And then you get your gold watch, wherein this new generation, the phone changes every 9 months now. So what makes you think you're not going to change an employer when technology and everything else is moving at such a rapid rate? So I think it's also, it's not just because of who they are. I think that's an and part of it, that they're trying to discover new things, that they're doing that. But it's also the way the infrastructure of the economy has been built now. Companies come and go, and there's a new startup and this one, and we got this funding, and now we're going to. So people are moving to where those new startups are, wherein back in the day we had those brick and mortar, this is the factory you're going to work in until you retire, when there were pensions and things like that. The things have changed. So our loyalty was built on the infrastructure that we came into as well.
Yes. And it's also a life stage thing. When millennials who are starting to turn 50 in about 4 or 5 years, they're going to be in the same position as you were when you were 50 or I am at 50, which is that, you know, now, okay, I'm settled. I kind of have my groove. I know what I'm good at. Their turnover rates are going to go down. So it's definitely not a fixed, it's not fixed by generation specifically. It's really more tied to life stage.
Yeah. So now let's talk a little bit about how do we get these age-diverse teams, and how does AARP in particular support employers in building age-diverse teams?
Yeah, so we actually have a long history of promoting the value of older workers. And so, as I mentioned at the top, the work that I do is to engage the HR community and learning and development folks and workforce planning folks. And I just look for all of the important arguments as to why older workers are such a valuable part of a multi-generational mix of workers. The first is certainly demographics. The 50 plus are currently about a little less than 1/3 of the entire workforce is over the age of 50. And in fact, a little over half of the workforce is 40 plus, which is a very strong argument to an employer because the Age Discrimination in Employment Act, the federal anti-age discrimination law, covers workers 40 and up. So that's over half the workforce is covered by that protection. So demographics are an important one. Also highlighting the immense value of what we call soft skills, but what more accurately might be called sort of durable human skills that take time to develop. We know that those skills are often learned on the job and over decades of experience. So there's the soft skills, which I argue in this AI race are extremely important because we need older workers to help. So we have the not only how to do something, but why to do it. Why should we do AI? Where should we invest? How much knock-on effect will this cause in other systems or other parts of our processes? That type of expertise we really need right now. And I think older workers are a good place to start to look for that type of expertise. And then I also mentioned hard skills that older workers have. They've developed, again, a lot of experience in their profession. They have a lot of deep knowledge of either their company or their profession or both. So that's hard to recreate. You can't just get that overnight, and you can't hire 2 younger workers and get the same level of experience and expertise as you can hiring a single older worker. So I make those types of arguments. Again, I think that younger workers are very important. It's just that I'm talking specifically about the value of older workers here. We highlight case studies when we can do that. We also have 2 programs for the employer community to engage with us. And the first one is the AARP Employer Pledge, which you can find out more about by going to aarp.org/employer pledge. And it's a nationwide group of companies that stand with us in affirming the value of older workers and also the value of a multi-generational workforce. So that's one. And then we have a learning collaborative, which we call it's a mouthful, but we call it the Living, Learning, and Earning Longer Collaborative. That tends to be for larger global companies that are interested in knowledge sharing. So those are two ways that we engage the community of employers. And I'm always available on LinkedIn and by email for folks who have questions. We try and help out any way we can. And then, as I mentioned too, we have a great amount of resources for employers.
That's fantastic. And give us the website again to go to.
Sure. It's if you go to www.aarp.org/employer pledge. And again, that same URL /employers, you'll get to our website that has all of those resources, including that hiring guide that I mentioned that just launched.
Wonderful, wonderful. So I'm going to transition now a little bit. And now I want to discuss some more practical advice for our listeners, particularly in regards to strategies for older job seekers. How can older workers counter the biases while working or during their job search and during the interview process?
Yes. So there's a lot of resources that we have, again, on aarp.org/work. We have tons of resources for older job seekers and older workers. There's so much there that talks about how to keep your skills current, how to prep for interviews, how to do the job search in this digital age, dealing with your resume and LinkedIn. And so there's tons of practical advice on our website and even webinars you can take. I want to mention that right away. The second thing I want to say is that, unfortunately, age discrimination is real. And if you feel that you are being discriminated against based on age, it's really important to document as much as you can in real time and as clearly as you can. That's a very important part of any recourse you might take. Also, it's important to stay grounded and calm if you're encountering sort of casual ageism. Definitely try not to internalize ageism against yourself. We'll hear people say that all the time, like, oh, you know, I don't think I can learn that, or I'm having a senior moment or whatever. Try really hard to not bring that energy. Don't show that energy to your colleagues or manifest it for yourself. But also, if you encounter ageism from other people, maybe try to dispel things with humor or say, hey, how would you feel if I invoked any other aspect of your identity in this way in the workplace? I'd probably get a lot of pushback. And then another thing that's important too, in terms of competing in the current labor market, is you do really have to stay competitive. It's really important to stay competitive, not only with your skills, but in the way that you signal your openness to change, your openness to learning new things, your curiosity about things. That's very important. And a small tip with regard to skills is to research how your current skills are talked about in the current lingo. So you may have the skills that are valuable or desired by a job, but you're referring to them in outdated language. So I'm thinking particularly of like content creation, right? So we might say, oh, I'm good at creating copy or writing copy. Now that skill would probably be much better couched as content creation or storytelling, right? So just brush up on how your skills are referred to today.
Exactly, exactly. That's great. And when we think about that, one of the ways that people are seeking new workers and looking at new workers is through platforms like LinkedIn. How can someone over 50 make their resume and their LinkedIn profile stand out?
So on LinkedIn, it's a little different from your resume. They're related, but it's a little different from your resume. LinkedIn offers you the opportunity to have a narrative. There's like a paragraph that you can use to really tell your own story and your elevator speech, as it used to be called. So that's really important to craft that, spend a lot of time crafting that. You'll see people's LinkedIn paragraphs will say things like a proven leader with experience leading change management and those kinds of phrases. So on LinkedIn, that's a really important place to spend time working on that narrative. On your resume, it's important to change your resume for each job you apply for. I know it's frustrating, or at least I find it frustrating. It sounds exhausting to me, but it's just the name of the game now. You have to tailor your resume for each job you apply for. A couple other resume tips. Don't let it go longer than 2 pages, unless you're an academic, which is a totally different ballgame. But don't have a resume longer than 2 pages. Take dates off where you can. There's different models of resume you can use. Some are called functional, or hybrid. So you're not focused on the chronology of your career. And with a functional resume, you can emphasize, you can cherry pick across your long career and take the skills that are the most relevant. Sometimes the skills that you or the experience you had a long time ago is really relevant. I can think specifically of examples in technology where, and this is interesting to me too, companies who want people who are good at tech that was popular 25 years ago, they want those older tech workers because the younger workers aren't learning those skills. But regardless, you want to make sure that you're only highlighting the skills on your resume that are relevant. There's no need to detail every single job that you've ever had. So those are some more tips on resumes.
Those are great tips because I know I grew up with the chronological resume and you had to have it from this point to this point I worked here. But that goes back to the longevity of working at places. Back then, people looked for how long were you on this job? And I've even been in some job searches with a multi-generational group. And I noticed the older workers are like, well, I don't know if I would want that person. They didn't stay at their job very long. Wherein the other people would be in the room like, but look at the skills they have. So thinking about bringing our resumes into date with more functionality versus chronological order, I think that's really, really a great point on the resumes. And understanding how to use LinkedIn a little bit better. It's not just a place to pop your resume on there for people to take a look. What advice would you have for older adults who are switching industries or starting over?
You mentioned LinkedIn, so I'm just going to dive right back to that platform. LinkedIn is a great way to build your network. And when you are switching industries or starting over, even if you're just looking for a new job in your same industry, networks are incredibly important. So make sure that you leverage your network. But backing up a little bit, the first thing you should do certainly is to assess the skills you have and figure out a plan for how you're going to get the trainings or the certifications you need to fill any gaps in the new direction you're going. I always like to tell this story because I think it's really interesting and it goes to this point of thinking creatively about professions that might be adjacent to yours or have a large overlap of skills. And the example I like to give is that I did hear a couple of years ago, I was talking with someone in the skills profession, and they said, we have found that people who retire from air traffic control jobs are really good at risk management. So that struck me as so interesting because that makes sense. Of course, risk management is, to a certain extent, a great deal of what air traffic control is all about. So think creatively. Another way to think about it is, could you pivot into teaching what you have experience in? So there's lots of ways that you can change professions without having to completely wholesale do 100% new skills. And the other thing I would say too is you need to show that you mean business. You may need to spend some time diving into this new industry or this new profession. That might mean doing project work. That might mean doing volunteer work, creating a side hustle. We have a great example here at AARP of our Connecticut State Office Director. She decided that she would volunteer and provide communication support for local charities free. You know, she's just going to volunteer and do that. And that meant that she was able to gain those skills and get her name out on press releases because her name would be on the press release. And that gave her some visibility and gave her some traction. And through that, she sort of switched careers. So that's another example of how it's important to gain that experience in lots of different ways. Yes, you can take courses, but you can also do a side hustle, do gig work or volunteer work to build those skills, not only the skills, but again, crucially, the network.
Oh, that's really, really good information. Great examples, great advice. I have another question that I don't even know if it relates into this. It relates a little bit, but I don't know if you can answer this one. Is there a going job market rate when you're entering into something new? Would you suggest people taking a pay cut to enter into something new, just going after what they're normally paid? How does that look in terms of getting your salary adjusted?
So I wouldn't, in a blanket statement, suggest that you look to take a pay cut. But I would say that if it is as part of your strategy, you're taking a more junior role to learn a new skill or learn a new profession, then you just need to go in with your eyes open and be transparent and ask, or if the company talks about a salary range, you need to know that that is the salary range for that job. And if that's okay, that's great. I tell employers this all the time, by the way. I say, do not assume that an older worker applying for a more junior role is going to ask for more money. They may, but they may not. Don't assume on their behalf. Ask them. So anyway, yeah, you may need to take a salary cut if you're, like I said, building up a new skill by taking a more junior role. You may offer if you feel during the interview process that that's a fear and it's something you can accommodate, but I wouldn't lead with it. I wouldn't say that it's absolutely necessary.
Okay. This has just been wonderful. Does AARP offer any additional resources or tools for older workers and job seekers?
Yes, we do. We have, like I said, we have so many resources for older job seekers and older workers. We have launched a collaboration with Indeed, which is the huge job board job search engine. And so we have resume help, interview prep help through that collaboration with Indeed. We also have our own resources on aarp.org, as I mentioned. So if you go to aarp.org/work, you'll find all kinds of great resources, including we have a job search toolkit. We have, as I mentioned, webinars. We have something called AARP Skills Builder, which has a couple of free courses and then other courses that you have to pay for, but they are anything from Microsoft Office to Cybersecurity 101. So we've got a lot of opportunity for folks to brush up on their skills and improve their resume and just tips for competing.
And it's aarp.com/work.
It's aarp.org/work.
aarp.org/work.
Yeah.
I know we have both entities, the org and the com, but
we do. Yep.
aarp.org/work. Heather, thank you so much. Do you have any final comments for our listeners before we wrap up today's interview?
My final comment is just to believe in yourself. I know that ageism is out there. It's unfortunate. We're working against it. We continue tirelessly to work against it, but you do have so much to bring to your companies and your organizations. You have decades of experience in your profession. You have so many soft skills. You, as far as you tell us, we know you're curious and want to learn new skills. So really lean into those things and lead with them when you're not only at your current place of work, but if you're looking for another job.
Thank you so much, Heather. We've been listening and having a conversation with Heather Tinsley Fix. Heather, again, I want to thank you for joining us on In Clear Terms with AARP California. And thank you for your work.
Thanks for having me.
In future episodes, we look forward to hosting experts who can shed light on critical issues in our state, how AARP California is working to ensure the voice of those ages 50 plus is heard, and how you, our listeners, can learn more and act on these important decisions. Thank you for listening.